Hey everyone, welcome to the Real House Stories podcast. Today we have Steve Zambo, CEO and founder at the AGL Group. Steve, grateful to have you on, brother.
Yeah, Zach, I appreciate you extending the invite here. I'm really excited.
I'm excited for this one too because you run a business that not many people are in, and nor do many people want to get involved in. So.
Yeah, so that's a good segue. So I'm the CEO co-founder of the AGL Group. We're an international logistics firm, and to say most people don't want to get into it, I think is an understatement. Most people don't even know about
Yeah.
it. So, yeah.
So for those who like don't know who you are and what that even is, share a little bit about how you found yourself in this position and what that business looks like in general.
Yeah, I think some background about, just kind of my upbringing is important in terms of how I got to where I'm at today. But before I get into that, give you a quick kind of overview of what AGL is. And so we're an international logistics firm, like I just said. We have right now going on 80 employees, four offices, give or take. And we export containers all over the world, do customs filing, banking, the actual shipping portion. We move trucks all over the United States, everything from pallets to chips. We do a bunch of dumplings, which is one of my favorite things. And then we also import a bunch of goods. So we actually just won a project that we're in the middle of doing right now. We're importing 30% of all the IV fluid bags that are inbound to the United States. There's an
Really?
IV fluid bag shortage, in hospitals right now because the main supplier, Baxter, they provide 70% of the bags to the US and they just got absolutely crushed with Hurricane Helene a couple months ago. So, we've been instrumental in getting fluid bags into the US, which has been
Right.
really cool. Yeah. So that's a quick little overview. We import, we export, we move stuff around domestically, and it's been a ton of fun. I founded the company about 11 and a half years ago with Dad, and Dad's instrumental in this because Dad was a vice president of Evergreen Steamship Line back in 1982, and in 1984 he founded the first lumber specific freight forwarder in the United States with now my mother. And so they ran that business from 84 all the way up until 2005 when they sold it. And so my upbringing wasn't typical, dining room conversations of how is science? What was math like? How were your grades? It was, them talking about receivables and payables and their trucking providers and steamship lines and clients and market shifts. So we didn't really have traditional, when you think of watching like Modern Family in a dining room conversation, that was not happening at my house. So
Interesting.
it's pretty cool. Yeah.
So what do you like about the business? Because it's a very operationally complex one, it seems.
Yeah, it's extremely operationally complex. I mean, we have clients that are all over the world. We ship to 120 plus countries. We have clients in literally every single state. So, it's really cool in that sense because you see all types of life. You get to learn about different cultures, different things that cultures accept or don't accept or frown down upon that might be commonplace here in the States. And so it's just a little bit different in that regard, which keeps it interesting and fun. It also, I think when you start to work with such a wide group of individuals, you just become more cultured by default, right? You got to go visit them in some of their locations, but you learn a lot about the broader world, and it kind of gets you out of your, what I would call little bubble. So I really like that aspect of the business and logistics in general, Zach. I mean, nobody really thinks about how does, Taco Bell, right? It can get delivered to your door. How do their products get to them? They have a massive distribution network. Where are those products created? Those are created by a white labeled manufacturer. Where are they getting their products from? A farm somewhere. And at every step of the way, logistics is involved in getting that product further upstream. And so it's everywhere around you, but it's nowhere at the same time. It's like the biggest hidden secret ever. It's pretty interesting. Yeah.
How did COVID affect your business?
COVID was horrible at the beginning. Quite honestly, so each country operated differently. And then past that, each state in the United States was operating differently. So we have a Massachusetts office and a Florida office. And the way that Massachusetts not our company, but the way that the governments handled COVID were totally different. In Florida, everything was open. Masks were not a thing. So, my team in Florida said, "Hey, we want to come to the office. We don't want to be remote, and we're not wearing masks." Okay. Whereas my mask team is, "No, we're not coming into the office. We are going to be, and when we come back, we need certain parameters set in place." So it was a really interesting dynamic, just even internally. We set some basic ground rules in terms of how we were going to handle that. So that was fine. Each state had different regulations, though, and so there would be some days where the state of Pennsylvania allowed truckers to go through, and the next day they wouldn't because they changed the restrictions. So we had a couple of weeks
Really?
of just start and stop, and it became really, really challenging to manage just from a day-to-day perspective.
I can
So
imagine.
yeah, it was tough. And then not only that, right? You have the fear of the unknown. The rest of the world is all operating differently. Your clients don't know what's going to happen. And then your team is saying, "Hey, am I going to have a job?" Because, shipments have come to a grinding halt. And so, we have some core values here at AGL. One of them is family focused and integrity. And I brought the team into an all hands meeting like week two of COVID. And I said, "Look, we'll push through it. Everyone will have a job. I don't care if we lose money or make money at the end of the day. Like, we're gonna push through this and we'll figure it out on the backside." And that's what we did. We just, put our heads down and kind of plowed through it the best that we could. So it was a challenge.
So this is what I'm really curious about. How do you think through, because you have, I think last you spoke, what you had, was it 100, couple hundred, or was it like closer to 70?
Employees?
Yeah.
Yeah, we have 80 team members
80.
currently,
Okay, that's what I thought.
in two countries in like eight states. Yeah.
So how do you manage a culture?
We are very intentional about culture. So we run our business on EOS. So if you've ever read Gino Wickman's Traction, it's basically what I would call a people operating system. And so when you think about a business, you have a CRM, right? Your tool that you use from a client relations perspective, and you're trying to drive business that way, keeping a repository of all the information. That's one system, right, that you might use. But EOS is more of a, like I said, a people operation system. And so we have core values, which I just lined out one of them. We have innovative, dedicated, family focused, and integrity. And so those are the four core values. And so every Friday, first Friday of the month, staff meeting, we run through what those mean as an organization. We have core value nominations every month.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so every month somebody will get a $500 check, and other team members vote for who that is. And then the whole company votes on who won the nomination for that month. So it's pretty cool. So that's part of the core values, but we have what we call rocks, and rocks are it's basically a KPI or metric that somebody is responsible for over the next 90 days, and we do them quarterly. And so everybody in the company has a rock, and this rock will roll up to, like, let's say our goal this year is to do 40,000 loads. Well, the VP's rock might be to hire X amount of, sales reps in order to get to that number. Well, then the sales manager might be, we need to move X amount of loads per rep. And so each person has a number that trickles all the way down to the lowest individual that rolls all the way up to our ultimate goal. And so if we have that 40,000, somebody's goal on the lowest level might be to do 200 loads a month or something like that. Or it might be client driven or something else. And so there's a level of accountability there that everybody sees. So we're a data-driven organization that is always trying to grow. And so when you're managing culture, you got to have radical transparency with your data, with your core values, with your team. And every first Friday of the month during that staff meeting, we're going through those KPIs, we're going through core values, we're going through the charity donations that we do quarterly, which I'll talk about in a minute, which are, I think, really cool. And we're transparently showing what the P&L is. So, like, there's no secrets here. Everybody knows exactly what's going on at any given time, which I think makes it a lot easier to stand behind the mission and where we're going because everybody knows, okay, the company's doing boom, boom, boom in order to get there.
Yeah.
So, yeah,
It's
it's
interesting.
not
It's almost
easy
like
though.
that open door.
It totally is an open door. Yeah. I mean,
Was
we
that
believe in
something?
radical transparency. Yeah.
Was that something that you from the get understood? Was there a point where you were like, we should probably be thinking more about this? Like, how did you start to realize,
Yeah.
implement building a good culture? Because I think that's like so important.
So, we started the business, like I said, in 2013. And at that time, it was my dad, my mom, and my girlfriend, who's now my wife. And we were in a 15 by 15 converted dentist office. And those first 2 years were survival. You know, can we get more clients? Can we turn this profitable? What does this look like? And then by year four, startup costs were paid off. We had made like two or three hires. The team is seven. And at that point, it was all right, you know, this is a viable business. We can really do something with this, really scale it in the future. We needed to look at what do we need to do to get there. And in order to build anything, well, let me back it up. They say if you want to go fast, go alone. And if you want to go far, go together. And so in order to build anything, you need to go together. And in order to go together, you need to intentionally build a culture that revolves around core values, the same mindset, not necessarily the same ideas, because you want competing ideas because that's how you really grow. But you need to have that same growth-oriented mindset to push forward. And so I would say in about year four, I kind of looked around one day and I was like, all right, we can bumble along and have a nice little business and get to 15, 20 people and, you know, do 20 million in revenue and be happy, or we can be intentional about building a culture, setting up a structure, and just going full send.
Yeah.
And I'm only 36, so that was 7 years ago. So I was about 20, was that 29 at the time? And so, you know, when you're that young, you're obviously more apt to take risks. So it was like, let's just go full send. And
Yeah.
it starts with the culture. And so we were very intentional at that point about starting to build the culture.
What was it like in the dentist office?
Oh, well, I don't know that you're married, but if you've ever tried working with, you know, your girlfriend or wife, that's a challenge to begin with. And
Yep.
then you add mom and dad in, aka her in-laws, and it's doubly challenging. And
Yeah.
we had just moved back from Los Angeles to Boston, where we started this. And we were living with my parents. So not only when we first started, not only were we working together with them all day, we'd go home and eat dinner with them and be at their house all day. And so that was the first year. And so that was it's my childhood house, right? So it wasn't horrible for me, but I think my wife would tell you something different.
Fair enough.
Yeah,
Fair
you
enough.
know. Yeah.
Interesting. So I'm curious because, again, I feel like, especially in the age of technology, a lot of people can start a business with not much capital up front. You don't have to have a huge knowledge base. Like, I started a detailing business and could have run the whole thing from my cell phone. I ran it out of my fraternity house. Like, same kind of thing where it's bootstrapped. But I'm very curious, what do you think what's one thing that a lot of people miss when it comes to building a business, both in general, but also when there's that level of buy-in, right? Because I feel like when you build a logistics company, it's a lot more of like, this is what we're doing, and it's harder to get that, not harder, but shiny object syndrome isn't, it's not as easy for you to just be like, I'm going to do this model and then this model and then this model.
Yeah, that's a great question. So I think it's kind of twofold, right? I think anytime you start a business, you got to look at it as one, is this going to be a lifestyle business? Do I want to have it be, you know, lean and mean, automate a couple things, make, you know, 5, 10 grand a month, marketing, consulting, something like that? Or hey, are we going to build, you know, more of a traditional corporation style, at which point we're going to need capital. There's going to be a lot of money coming in, coming out, especially with the business that we do. And I think it, you know, there's kind of two different mindsets, and I don't think one versus the other is necessarily wrong. I think that just depends on the founder and what they want. Because to your point, when, you know, it's a smaller org, the ability to be agile is very easy, and you can start going after whatever. For us, we had out of the gate, you know, we had a very specific niche, export forest products, and that's where we built the majority of the business. So we work with the largest hardwood sawmills in the United States. They send their product overseas, and that lumber turns into furniture and flooring that eventually gets imported back into the States. Manufacturing costs and production costs are so low over in Vietnam and China that it just makes sense for them to do that versus actually doing it here in the States. So it's interesting in that regard. But in terms of, what I think people might miss when you're trying to start that level of a corporation is at the beginning, you have to be lean and mean, unless you've raised a Series A or you've raised a bunch of money. If you're just using, a couple hundred grand, you're gonna have to be lean and mean. You're not gonna be paying yourself at the beginning, if at all. It's money in, money out. And usually at the beginning, you're upside down on cash because you have to pay your vendors within 7 days or sometimes before it moves because you have no credit. Whereas your clients, you're giving them 30 days. So you need to have a 30-day float. And so that can become very challenging. So you need to have a team that's on board with the idea of we're building for the future. You're going to need some capital. There's not going to be a C-suite. We're not going to be able to just pass things off. You got to get really into the weeds across the entirety of the org.
That has to give you a really good understanding of it, though.
It does. And so, like I started as you can call it kind of like an export account manager. So all day I'm winning new business, I'm quoting new business, I'm fulfilling and executing on the business. And then when I'm done with that, I'm turning around and trying to sell more business at the same time while my wife and mom are doing the back end customs and compliance portion of it, and then also doing the invoicing. So you need a small team for this. But it gives you such a fundamental understanding. So now when we're in the position we're at and we start to look at tech, we've been building our own transportation management software, TMS, for the last 18 months. We've developed it in-house. And so when I was looking at this tech, it's okay, how do we make it for our business, but then also make it right? It's headless. We can API into any software that we need to. What reporting functionality do we need that's specific to this? So I could really look at it at a much more micro level than a lot of a lot of other off-the-shelf providers might have, which gives us a competitive advantage because I in turn go to our clients. I just did this last week. And we're automating a ton of functions in their day-to-day through our software now. And so they're a great client of ours. We've been doing business with them for 8 years, but our manual touch points are going to go from 40 a day down to four with them,
Oh,
and
wow.
that's a day, right? So you're looking at 200 to to 30 on the week. So it's cool, but it's definitely challenging.
Where do you see? Because one, I think even more so for your business, the automation side of things and
Yeah.
just tech in general is going to change the landscape tenfold, if not way more than that. How do you see it shifting the landscape? Because I know you see things like Amazon, which is basically a logistics company doing a lot of stuff on the manufacturing side and just moving things around. How do you see it changing the landscape and really just business in general going forward?
Yeah. So tech in the logistics space is, for starters, it's antiquated. It's way behind the times. So you do have your Amazons, all proprietary built. They built it exactly for their model. But the majority of the international land logistics space is still working on EDI, which is 304 messages. And so it's very cumbersome to actually implement and update and retrieve and pull data. I mean, it is an implementation usually take like 90 to 120 days, and it's absolutely brutal. One of the biggest challenges, though, with standardizing tech and moving tech forward in international logistics is you have different countries involved. So it's different countries' customs. So you have China, right? For instance, we do a ton of with China. Do you think China's going to want to give you access to a lot of their data? Absolutely not. So that doesn't allow certain tech to get pushed forward from a customs perspective. So, for instance, like a bill of lading, which is it's the same thing as like a plane ticket. It says, hey, this good, aka this person, is going from point A to point B on this flight, on this date, on this time, blah, blah, blah. It's the same thing, a bill of lading. And so right now, for 99% of countries, you need to send original bills of lading, which means you need to print off and manually scan and send a FedEx courier package overseas for every single shipment that we do. So that is an area where if we can make it digital, which they're working towards, you'll be able to automate a ton of the workflow. But for the time being, a lot of countries still require these wet signatures. So you can't automate that until countries change. And they don't want to, they want wet signatures for, I don't know, a lot of these countries haven't really just adopted tech at all. So it's a really challenging, I would say it's a really challenging space from a macro country perspective. Past that, one of the biggest issues that I find in tech within the logistics space is that you have a lot of individuals who have come into the space, who've raised a ton of money to solve one specific issue, like maybe it's container tracking, container visibility, and they'll raise $15, $20 million. And all that they do is scrape data from like four or five websites to get you an updated shipping and ETA. And is it worth 50 grand a year? Not really. So there a lot of the tech solutions that are coming out are solving problems that aren't really problems for the majority of shippers. So it's been a really challenging space, I would say, in terms of actually seeing solid tech results for the last 18 to 24 months. That being said, I think that tech is huge going forward and in general in the space. I mean, we have a bunch of team members. The reason we developed our TMS was so that we actually have an open API into ChatGPT, OpenAI, and so we're automating a lot of the front-end data entry. We're automating a lot of the documentation checking, which used to be a manual process looking at screen A versus screen B. So there's opportunities to look at the whole process and say, hey, this can be automated, this can be automated, this can be automated. And that's what we're working towards right now. I believe you'll see a lot more of it in the future, but it's just such an antiquated industry that it's like it takes a long time for people to kind of get on board there.
Why is that?
So the barrier to entry to start is, I wouldn't say it's massive, but it's high enough. In order to start a business like ours, you need to be a qualifying officer. So you need to have worked in the industry for X amount of years. You need to have X amount of references. You need to put in your application with the Federal Maritime Commission, be approved. And so if I hadn't worked in the business prior through my parents, I wouldn't be able to be a qualifying officer. So if you wanted to go ahead and start a business today, you couldn't. You'd have to go work for somebody else for 3 to 5 years and then get references and then go out on your own. At which point, you'll need to go raise capital and start building a team. And it's a slog. And so a lot of it is. And so a lot of the owners in the industry, they're going to be retiring in the next 5 to 10 years. And for them, it's like, well, what's the point of implementing tech and learning a new system when I can just ride out the next 5, 10 and retire? I'm not gonna screw it. So you see a lot of that in the space outside of obviously, the top 10 who are, giant corporations.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Your second half to that question was, how do you see business going forward? When you say that, what exactly do you mean? Just so I can give like a more pointed answer.
So like the landscape, I know like myself being in the digital marketing side, it's like very aggressive in terms of how fast it moves. And so I'm just curious on the logistics side, but also like big picture, when you take a step back and you look at just the landscape of starting any business, how do you see that shifting in the future?
I think the landscape in terms of starting a business now is quite easy. I mean, and you know this, so if I wanted to start I actually just helped my wife start her business. She's a makeup artist, and so she does a lot of weddings. She does, conferences, senior high school pictures, whatever it might be. And so to set her up in the state of Florida, you go on Florida's, business website. I think it's sunbiz.net or something like that. You can register and have back your LLC within 24 hours, and then from there you go get your IN. I mean, you can literally start a business in a day. It is very easy to start a business. It's the moving from starting it to actually execute it. And that's, I think that is where the majority of people start to fall because they're like, oh, it's so easy to start. Let's get going. But it's to your point earlier, it's consistency. It's continually doing the thing you need to do to get that going. So I think starting a business isn't a challenge. I don't think it, honestly, I don't think it can get any easier. As long as you have somebody that's guiding you don't need to pay 5 grand to a lawyer, call yourself or myself and we can get you going in like a day. But in terms of the broader logistics space going forward. I think it'll be I think it'll be a it'll be a challenge. I mean, you have a new administration coming in, regardless of where you sit politically, it doesn't matter. There's always going to be changes with the new administration, new policies. I think we're going to see less of an international and more of a domestic push. And so with that just comes changes to the overall marketplace. And so the international space moves a lot slower than the domestic space. I mean, sorry. Yeah. The international space does move slower than the domestic space. So domestic is like what you were saying with marketing, digital marketing. I mean, there's new tech flying all the time. Loads get picked up on a Monday, delivered on a Tuesday. It's a much faster, more digital environment. Whereas international is, it takes 30 to 40 days for something to arrive. So you have time. It's a little bit of a slower pace.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Interesting. So
Yeah.
I gotta ask, what do you like about the game?
The
Business, the
business
general life,
game? The
anything,
game,
the game.
yeah. My favorite part is this sounds horrible, or it may, but I just love winning. Love winning. So love when we see a new client get on board and one of our sales rep ringing the bell in the office, that love seeing that. When we won that IV fluid bag project, to me that's awesome. Not only are we helping out, people that need to be helped in hospitals, but we're also crushing that on our side. So I love that. And then one of the things that I do enjoy and I reflect on a lot, and I talk to my mom every morning on my way into the office. But one of the things that we talk about often is, how resilient you become running a business, because over the last 11 years or so, we've had COVID, we've had a trade war. I've had a bunch. I had one of our steamship line partners who used to carry 20% of our cargo went bankrupt, and I had 400 containers in the water, and they just dropped them off all over the world.
Wow.
Yeah, it was fun. And so we have, we've had a bunch of regulatory changes. So at some point you become very resilient to the point where, you hear news and you go, okay, sounds good. We'll figure out how to take care of it. And it's no longer a matter of panic. And eventually that part starts to translate into your day-to-day life. So, my wife's car the other day, coolant started leaking on the highway, and she's like, what do we do? I was like, we drive it home, figure it out. Either we get it towed to the dealership or we put more coolant in. Simple as that. It is what it is. And if it stops running on the highway, then we pull over.
You just deal with it as it comes.
That's exactly it. So I would say, winning in the resiliency. And now the only way that you win is through consistent action and constantly doing the things that you need to do. So, it's to get that victory, there's a lot of mundane along the way to get there. And that part stinks sometimes, quite frankly. But there are moments where you're like, you know what, I think this one's gonna hit eventually. And you get that little inkling of being excited, and then it finally hits, and you're like, oh hell yeah, let's go.
It worked. Thank the Lord.
Exactly. Totally. Exactly.
Yeah. I
So
find it
yeah.
interesting too, because that's something I resonate with a lot, especially in this last year, because I tried a model and flopped it. And so it's like you put 7 months into something and it goes south, you learn to just, all right, if this is the game I want to play, this is the game I got to play. And I find it very, very interesting, again, how it translates. So, like, it went from freaking out. Like, I will always remember the first time I sent a crew member out for my detailing business. I went because I ran it in college. I went to my professor and I was freaking out. I have no idea what's going to happen. Like, I'm going to be on my phone. Just know that. And he's like, go to the back of the class then. Like, I don't care, but just go to the back of the class. So I'm like, all right. But you learn, and now it's like if I were to bring on someone new, or if I was to manage someone, it's a lot easier. And then that starts to translate outside. So like my car leaking oil. All right, what are we gonna do? Deal with it. It's not like freaking out like that used to be. And then it is the mundane, because I think a lot of people miss that business is very, very simple. It's just doing it over and over and over and over and over. Like, yeah, that's been especially this year, that's been the biggest takeaway, is it's like it's really not that
Hard.
special.
Yeah, it's not. It's putting in the work, it's being consistent. It's just doing it. Honestly, a lot of it is just doing what you say you're gonna do. So if you say you have a deliverable and you're gonna send it on 12/20, you better freaking send that deliverable on 12/20.
You
And
may
if
have.
you're if you keep doing those things over and over, eventually it works, as long as you have a business that makes sense.
Yeah.
And I mean, we've been talking a little bit about kind of like, my business and the success, but it hasn't all been successful. I signed a warehouse lease that I thought, on paper, the projections were great, had all these contracts lined up. I think it was going to be full day one. Market shifted. Six of the eight contracts pulled out. Things been losing money for 2.5 years. So, and so our lease is going to be up soon. I'm going to pull the plug, but it's a, that's a very, that was just a, that was a learning experience, but like that could have been a really good value add, or it couldn't. And so similar to your model that you worked on for 7 months that didn't end up panning out, lesson learned. It is what it is. I'll probably do more work upfront to figure out testing if that makes sense. And I'll probably write my contracts a little bit differently with some of my clients, because they were loosey-goosey, because we already handle a lot of their freight. So, I would definitely change how I did that. But, again, it is what it is. You have to kind of make some of those mistakes and learn from them along the way.
Yeah, hindsight is everything.
Totally.
So
100%. 100%. Yeah. I mean, I
that,
have millions of mistakes I could talk about that, didn't pan out, decisions that
yeah,
I made along the way. So
it's an everyday thing.
exactly. I mean, I don't know if you listen to Alex Ramosi, but one of the things he says is, every failure is one step closer to success. So, you just you write down another one, you keep hitting those notches, and eventually that notch will be a win.
Yeah, I'm a big believer it's a character trait thing more than it is a
Totally.
skill thing, and the
It
rest
is.
figures it out. I always joke about this, but I'm like, you can be the dumbest guy in the room, but if you just don't stop and you keep changing something, it'll hit eventually. Like, it
Sure.
may take you four times as long, but if you don't stop, you're gonna get there. Just
It's true.
keep failing and learning. You can't just fail and do the same thing over, because that's insanity, but learn
Literally,
from
yeah.
that, right? And that's where it you really start to see the return. So this really parlays nicely into what I know you wanted to mention a little bit before this, is the importance of like to continuing to push and keep trying. Why is resiliency and continuing to push so important to you?
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, and I've been saying this a lot lately, internally and to other people, but what else do you have to do, right? In general. So for me, I have my family that obviously that matters m very much. My daughter and my wife, and I'll continue to do my best to take care of them. But outside of that, you have to have something to strive for, and you have to have something to live for. And in order to do those things, you need to be continually pushing and moving forward. Stagnation, it's basically just shrinking. I don't believe in stagnation. So you're either going forward or going back. And so I think resiliency, yeah, it's a really good trait, but it's not something that you just pick up. It's a matter of, failing and continuing to do it. And like you said earlier, that's really how you become successful, not only in business, but in general. Even in relationships, you keep trying different things, and some of it works, some of it doesn't work. You kind of figure it out along the way. So I think, continuing to push forward is good. You should always be trying to grow.
How do you manage that and having a family? Because I'm single, or not single, but I don't have a family.
Yeah.
So, and I have a hard enough time balancing it,
Yeah.
or, just getting through life. So I'm curious, how do you manage all of that?
Yeah, I'm quite honestly, my wife and I, she, well, since she worked in the business, she understands the demands of the business, which is really helpful for me. But we have conversations, and she has literally every one of my flights that's coming up, or my travel schedule, I just send it to her calendar, so she has it there. She knows what's coming. But we've had conversations of like, hey, I'm gonna let you know when it's, my head is gonna be down season, versus when I can be a little bit more present. And so in general, I try to get home between 5 and 6 every day. I usually leave to go to the office between like 8:30 and 9:30. But there are times where I won't be, I'll be on the road, I won't be home for a week. And sometimes I'll say, hey, you know what, I'm not gonna go in on Tuesday. I'm gonna spend a little bit more time with you guys, just to try to, balance that. But in general, I don't think, well, balance is something that I think a lot of people strive for, work-life balance. I don't think it's real, personally, because I think there's ways to take your work and your life and combine them. And so some of the trips that I go on, I'll bring my wife and daughter, and I'll be like, hey, I gotta go work for the, Tuesday, Wednesday. I'll be back after dinner. We can hang out. In the morning, I'll eat breakfast with you guys. You guys do your thing. Thursday, Friday, though, we're gonna hang out. And so like this coming week, we're gonna be going to Reno, Nevada. I got work on Monday, Tuesday. Then we got Christmas. Then we got, we're gonna spend a couple of days with family out there, and then we're gonna go to Tahoe and ski for a few days, and then I'm gonna come home.
There we
So it's gonna
go.
be exactly. So it's gonna be work, family, and we're gonna ski. And so I think you have to find a way to marry the two. I never think that there's ever gonna be this perfect, 50-50 balance. I think that's totally fake if you're building something worthwhile. Yeah, personally.
I couldn't agree more. I think it's whatever you do, you're all in. I think the word choice is everything, and that word balance. It's funny, if I have any family listening to this, they'll like start nagging at me for it, but it's something I say a lot, or it's just like balance is borderline pointless. It's being all in wherever you are,
100%.
with family or with family. If you're working, you're working. It's like if you're trying to balance the two, you're already in the wrong headspace.
100%. Yeah. I mean, what you're talking about too is being present in the moment, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think there's something to be said there too. So when I go home, my phone goes, face down on silent, and I'll look at it once my daughter goes to bed at like 9:30 again. But between 6 and 9:30, it's pretty much not out. I'm there. We're building Legos, or we're playing princess or tea or whatever the hell she wants to do.
Yeah.
So yeah, kick the soccer
That's gotta
ball.
be awesome.
It's fun. It's really fun. Yeah. So
So
it's
I know
cool.
our time's coming to an end here, so I'm gonna ask you two questions back to back. First one is, who are you looking to help with your business?
Yeah. So macro level, we have a target, client profile. They're typically businesses that are between 0 and 250 million that don't have an extremely large logistics staff, and they can leverage our team, our knowledge, and our software. And so it's companies like that that are in food and bev, pallets, the lumber market. And we like to partner with organizations that are that value partnerships, so it's not just a straight data play. There is a level of knowing who they are. So that's who we like to help in that regard. On that note, we didn't get to talk about this too much earlier. We have a program here at AGL called AGL Cares. And so for every load that we move, we donate $1 to a charity.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, and every quarter, our entire team company-wide submits charities that they think, that they're passionate about. And then that list of charities gets put out to the company again. And the entirety of the company votes on the charities, and whatever has the most votes is who we'll donate to for the following quarter. So we've donated this year, we're north of 25,000 this year. We donated 30 something thousand last year. So we're like, over the last few years, we donated a few hundred thousand dollars to various charities. Like Wounded Warrior Project was one, different animal shelters. There's a bunch of different cool things. So we're also trying to help not just, clients, but community and what our team cares about, which is pretty cool.
Love it. If
Yeah.
there's one last piece of advice you'd share with others, what would that be?
One last piece of advice. So one thing I've been really big on lately is it's just, live full, die empty. So similar to what you were saying, whatever you're doing, dive all the way in. And at the end of the day, the only person that really cares is going to be yourself. So whatever you're doing, go for it, because everybody else is, for the most part, consumed with what's going on in their world. They don't really care. So if you get embarrassed about doing something, stop it, knock it off, go for it, because it doesn't matter. we're all going to end up dying at some point. So you might as well is just do whatever it is that you think you want to do. Yeah.
I love it, dude. This is a pleasure as always, man.
That's good. It's good getting a chance to catch up with you, Zach.
Yeah, we got to keep doing this.
I agree.
So, if you guys want to learn more about what he's up to, you can head to the description below and you can check them out at www.theaglgroup.com. Steve, it was a pleasure, brother.
Zach, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on today.
Absolutely.